Okay, good morning. We had a very productive few days, covered a lot of subjects. I think the NFL made a lot of improvements this week. We feel very good about what we did, and I'd be happy to take your questions. That's all right. You can call me coach. That's what, that happens all the time.
I tend to think of you as a coach for other reasons, but Commissioner, with respect to the L.A. situation in 2016 commentary regarding the possibility of L.A., the NFL being in L.A. for 2016, can you clarify that? Because from a development perspective, it would seem unrealistic unless you're going to play in a temporary stadium at that point. But can you clarify that just for those who understand real estate development?
Well, first let me just say we're focused on doing this right. If we go back to the Los Angeles market, we want to succeed for the long term. And we have a lot to do to get to that place. So we're not focused on 16. Obviously, if it did happen in 16, you'd have to play in a temporary facility. We could not possibly construct a stadium in that time frame. But right now, our focus is on the process, making sure that we're evaluating the opportunities in their existing markets, making sure we understand that, and also making sure that we understand what it takes to be successful in Los Angeles long term.
Roger.
Yes.
Hey.
Sorry, Tom.
When Adrian Peterson was suspended in November, the letter said that he would be eligible for reinstatement no sooner than April 15th. He's now, after the federal judge made the decision, moved back to the exempt list, not the suspended list. So is April 15th still a relevant date, or what is the timeline for his status to change?
Yes, it is, Tom. We're going to continue the evaluation. We'll have our people, and I will expect to meet with Adrian before we make a final determination on his status. But we expect to keep to that timetable.
Roger, your thoughts on the St. Louis stadium plan? Do you see progress? Would you like to see more progress? Just what the status is there?
Well, you always want to see more progress, Jim, I think. But I think what they have done, I've spoken to the governor, our staff has been there. I think Dave Peacock has done a terrific job of formulating a plan. They have a great site. They have a site that I think is important for St. Louis to redevelop. Makes a perfect stadium site, as the governor told me. And I think they're working towards making it become a reality. And I think we need to continue that momentum. We need to continue the focus of making it a reality. And that's a positive. And I think the efforts that are going on there are very positive.
Ben Boston?
In the back here, two quick questions. What's the status of Ted Wells' investigation into the deflated football matter? Does it have to be completed by the draft? And I have a quick follow-up when you're done.
We have not put a time frame on Ted Wells. We've asked him to be thorough, complete, and when he's finished with that, then he'll give that to us and to the public in general.
And do you feel the league office handled everything appropriately and correctly, or do you have any regrets over the way that the incident cast a pall over the 2 weeks and dominated the conversation and may have prematurely stained the reputations of the Patriots and Tom Brady and Bill Belichick?
Well, I think it made it very clear at the Super Bowl that we were not making any judgments, that we were obligated as part of our role to make sure we understand the facts. Whenever there's a charge, potentially, of a violation of our rules, we take it very seriously. And that's our obligation. It's our obligation to the other 31 clubs. Ted Wells will be going through the report. If there was anything that we as a league did incorrectly, we'll know about it in that report.
Roger, the Browns have admitted to texting to the sideline during a game, which apparently is a violation of the electronic device rules. How serious is this, and will there be discipline coming?
Well, again, Tony, to the same point, any violation of our rules is something we take seriously. It affects the integrity of the game, and all 32 teams need to be operating under the same rules. I think our clubs expect that, and our fans expect that. So any violation of that is treated seriously. I have not been brought up to speed on that in the last couple of days. Obviously, I've been here, but I'm sure there'll be a focus on that in the next couple of days.
Mark Maskey.
Roger, how would you characterize the discussion here on expanded playoffs, and what do you feel the likelihood of that is in future seasons?
Mark, we had a healthy discussion on that. As you know, this is something we've been evaluating over the last couple of years. And I think several factors went into the decision to at least postpone the expanded playoffs. Some of them would be on the competitive side. The last 2 years, interesting enough, it's been inconsistent with our experience in the past, in that the last 2 weeks we actually had five less teams that would have qualified for the playoffs under the 14-team format than the 12. And that's a little bit counterintuitive to the experience we had. So whenever we make a change like this, we want to look at what are the positives and negatives, what are the unintended consequences. We want to make the regular season more important, more exciting, and have more teams in the race. If we're not doing that, then we want to make sure that we understand why and what else we could do to affect that. We also have scheduling issues as far as when we could play the games, Saturday, Sunday. We've looked at a Monday night. College football has a national championship on Monday night. We certainly don't want to conflict with that. So there are a number of factors that are going on that we just felt the right thing for us to do was take another year, evaluate all this, make the right decision long term. He's got a follow up. Go ahead, Mark. I can hear you.
Perhaps that would be shot to the network at the same time that the long term Thursday night TV package is shot to the network. Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, there's no question that a playoff game or an extra playoff game would be attractive to anybody on the Thursday night package. So that is a reality that, of course, there'd be interest in that. But I think we would have interest for expanded playoffs from the networks. I know we would have interest from the networks on an expanded playoffs, regardless of whether it was Thursday night.
Roger, during the anti-tampering window leading up to free agency, there were deals getting reported and apparently done like we haven't seen maybe ever. Where does the league stand as far as looking into some of those teams? How many teams or instances are you looking into? And what are some of the potential penalties that you're discussing?
Well, again, it's a very similar thing in a sense that we want to protect the integrity of the rules. All teams have to play by the same rules. We want to make sure that no teams are giving an advantage as it relates to free agency or the opportunity to get free agents. There are several teams and several issues that we're looking at. They're all being taken seriously. As soon as we have enough information, we will make a judgment on whether it's a violation or not. Once that happens, we'll certainly let everyone know publicly. Yes, Dan. I'm sorry, I'm going to Dan. Yeah. Well, Dan, I think several things. Just so what we've said is that it's important to balance the interest of having your stadiums full with our broadcast policies. The reality is by changing our broadcast policies over the last 6 or 10 years, we've given our clubs more flexibility to sell their stadiums out, more flexibility in their manifests, more flexibility in the way they can sell their tickets. And this has not really become an issue. We had zero blackouts in 2014. We had two in 13. And what we've seen is a significant change there. And I think the membership felt at this point in time with the work that's been done, the policy changes, that it was appropriate to suspend it for a year. Let's see what the impact is long term. And so that's the analysis that's going on. But I think what we've done is our clubs have done a great job aggressively marketing themselves in their market. And there's a positive, obviously, to having your games on television. It's a great marketing vehicle also. And that's always been a little bit of a debate.
Jason Cole.
Yes, Jason.
When Terrell Pryor came into the league, he was subject to discipline from the league for his actions in college. Under the personal conduct policy, is someone potentially subject to discipline for something that happened while they were in college?
Well, Jason, it's been a few years since I reflected back on the Terrell Pryor case, but I believe the discipline on the Terrell Pryor case was more as a result of how he may have manipulated his status for the draft versus a supplemental draft. It wasn't for actions that he took as far as a personal conduct policy. The personal conduct policy for the NFL doesn't apply to someone who's in college. We don't have that right. We don't have that ability. We do have the ability, however, if a player has an issue in the NFL when the personal conduct policy applies to them, to consider that as an aggravating factor, something that could be considered in the context of the overall discipline.
Roger, regarding the Los Angeles.
Where you are, Sam. Oh, I'll get you. Okay.
Los Angeles process.
I'm shocked you're asking about that, Sam.
Yeah. Assuming that you're going to continually work with the home markets and monitor those, have you identified steps in the process that we can expect to see, or is there a plan as far as that's concerned? And is there anything we
just
might
in Los
expect?
Just in Los Angeles?
Right. And anything we might expect by the May meetings in terms of presentations to you or to the Los Angeles Working Group or anything like that by May?
Yes, I do expect that we'll be hearing from all three teams, not only to the league staff but also to the committee sometime in late April. We will likely report back to the membership again in May when we meet. There'll be a lot of dialogue. There's a tremendous amount of focus on the stadium alternatives, looking at those stadium alternatives, marketing studies in all of the markets, including current markets. So there's a great deal of work being done, and I would expect that will continue at a very disciplined pace.
John Houston. How are you, Roger?
All right, when you say over here, you got to give me more help. All right. Hey, Johnny.
There's been a recent upheaval in the Titans ownership situation. Could you update us on that? Also, you're losing Joel Buzzard after 40 years. Could you say something about Joel?
Yeah, I did yesterday. I'll start with your second question. But Joel Buzzard has served the league now for 40 years. I've been fortunate to work along with him for a large majority of that. And he represents the best of the NFL, in my opinion. He's someone that always puts the league first. I think he's a tremendous guardian of the game. He has been a wise counsel for three commissioners, and I can speak for myself, a very important counsel. He's made a difference in the NFL, and we're going to miss him. We're thankful that he's going to continue to play a role for us, but he's an extraordinary man, but also been incredible contributions to the league. He's also very bashful, so I don't think you're going to get a lot out of him. But John, you had another question, right? Tennessee ownership, right. Yes, this is something that we've been working on since Mr. Adams passed away. We want to ensure that the team is obviously under the proper management structure, ownership structure, as well as making sure that it's being represented properly, not only in Nashville and the Tennessee market, but also at the league level. We make, and we take it very seriously, the votes of every club. Each club is certainly dependent on the others to make informed decisions, and one with a long-term view towards what's best for the league and what's best for those franchises. And there is a commitment. I met with the ownership, along with Bob McNair, on Sunday. They understand our priorities and what needs to get done, and we'll continue to work with them with our finance committee.
Roger, right here.
Yes.
What's your timeline for Greg Hardy? I know you're trying to gain more information from his initial bench trial. Will there be a suspension coming soon? And what were your thoughts to the Cowboys signing him before you ruled on his situation?
Any club was free to sign Greg Hardy. They understood that we were reviewing his case for potential discipline. That it continues. We are trying to get as many facts as we possibly can to make the most informed decision we can so that we can uphold the standards that we've put forth in our personal conduct policy. And so I expect that that will conclude sometime in the near future, and we'll make it a decision shortly after. Yes, Harry. Yeah.
St. Louis, over here. Your level of concern in St. Louis that there's been virtually no communication between the owner, Stan Kroenke, and the city and the fans, and you have a fan base that could lose their team, and there really just hasn't been any communication with the owner.
Well, we certainly have had that conversation with the governor on several occasions. Our staff has been there on a regular basis, as you know, making sure that we're doing whatever we can do as a league. And I think it's a great deal, by the way. We've had a lot of experience in this and putting together a stadium plan that can be responsive not only to St. Louis, but also to work for a franchise long term. And so we're trying to do our part as a league. Every management structure is going to deal with those issues differently. He has contact with his season ticket base, maybe not through him directly, but through the team. And that's something that he's going to have to decide how he's going to proceed on that basis. Ira, you had some. I don't know whether I did more or less. I think that we were incredibly clear about our expectations of anybody who enters the NFL or is in the NFL, what we expect of them as men, and what they how they represent not only their franchise but also the NFL, and a full insight into our personal conduct and the reasons for it, and our services. He met with several people. The conversation was very candid, extremely candid. And I think this is a young man who understands his responsibility, and now it's up to him to look to that. Well, we spent time with him. I think we respected the players from time to time said we want to be with their families. As I understand it, he told somebody in our staff that was the case. I don't focus on the invitations. That's not my direct responsibility. We love to see the players there, but we also respect when they want to be with their families.
Roger, this is a follow-up on TextGate. Is it any sort of a mitigating factor that the texts were opinions and not anything designed to give the Browns a competitive advantage?
Well, I want to be careful of making any comments until after we've gotten all of the facts and I've had an opportunity to review them. Troy's Vincent has been focused on this with our staff. There are, of course, mitigating factors and factors that you have to consider. But the violation of the rule and the integrity of that rule is not necessarily whether you got an advantage or not. It's the fact that you broke a rule. And that's a more general comment. And we don't want people breaking the rules. The 32 clubs want to be operating under the same rules.
Williams, right, ESPN? Roger, has there been discussion in terms of moving up the time frame to...
I'm sorry, what?
Has there been discussion in terms of moving up the time frame for applying for relocation to the 2015 year? And is that something that you'll take up at the May meeting?
We've had some discussions within our committee of whether that time frame, if there was a relocation, whether that's the appropriate time frame to do so. There's a lot to do when you relocate a franchise. And what would be, if a decision is made earlier, would that give the teams a better opportunity to properly transition to a new marketplace, which is the goal if there is a relocation? So that's been discussed. We have not come to any conclusion on that. We haven't ruled it out, though.
And have you talked to San Diego Mayor Faulkner recently, and what do they need to do to keep the team in San Diego in terms of their process for a stadium?
I did speak to the mayor. I want to say it was a week before last. It was a very good conversation. He has a task force. We agreed to work with this task force to provide whatever resources we can from the league to help them address this issue in a responsible way. He's put a very aggressive time frame forward to try to get a solution. I think that's a positive step. And I encourage him to continue down that path. And if we can help to please let us know. I believe our staff is going out to meet with the task force in the next week or two.
We'll take a couple more.
John Toronto. Hi, Roger. When Terry and Kim Pegula bought the Buffalo Bills, most people in Toronto figured, well, that's it. No chance ever to get a franchise. But Terry yesterday told me that he would not stand in the way of an NFL franchise in Toronto, and what's more, that when in the purchase process, he was asked if he would be okay if there would be a Toronto franchise someday. Obviously, with LA in the front burner, where do things stand with Toronto longer term in the NFL's vision?
We haven't had much focus on it. Terry is exactly right. It was asked during the process when he met with the finance committee, and he had the exact answer he told you. He doesn't see that as an issue for him. His focus is on Buffalo, creating a solution and a franchise there long-term that represents that region. And he is incredibly focused on that and not concerned about Toronto. We continue our international development. We spend a great deal of time talking about our global opportunities here at this meeting. Toronto is an important market, but all of Canada is, and Mexico and the globe. So we're aggressively marketing ourselves on a global basis.
Roger, over here.
Yeah.
As the details for the draft have come together in Chicago, what in particular appeals to you about having it there, and what do you hope the league can accomplish by having it in Chicago?
Well, what appeals to me most is that I think returning the draft into the great Midwest, I think, is a great opportunity for us. I think the response we're seeing from everyone in Chicago gives us a great deal of excitement over this event. It continues to get bigger. The excitement is building a month away from the event. It is getting bigger physically also. There is more demand, so we're trying to make sure we can meet that demand. I think it's going to be a great experience. I think the fans are coming from a broader region. We have obviously people who attend the draft every year. We're giving a priority for them to make sure that they're still accommodated, even though we've changed it. But we have a new opportunity this year with an outdoor opportunity that more fans are going to be able to engage with the draft process. And I think that's exciting for our fans. It's great for us. I think it's great for our partners. And so we're excited about what's going to happen there. And the numbers keep changing about what the expectations are, how many people are going to be there. But I think the people of Chicago are going to over-deliver. And we're excited.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.